get fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
Good morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us by phone every Monday, we have Jimmy Petronas. He is our congressman from District 1, Northwest Florida. Hey, Jimmy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning. If I was, if I got up a little bit earlier, I'd be there in studio with you. I'll be in Pensacola in about an hour.
Oh, nice. What are you doing over here?
Oh, just got some meetings. A good friend of mine who's chair of small business, congressman out of Texas, Roger Williams, is bouncing around town with some meetings. And anyway, he tries to make the rounds when he can to visit the different members. And I invited him to Pensacola.
Well, very cool. All right. Well, sorry I'll miss you, but, you know, welcome to town again. You've been almost a year, right? You've been our congressman for just about a year. Within the next week, you'll have been a year, right?
That's right. That's right. Took office April 1, no joke. And here we go. It's been a heck of a ride, and really it's been an honor this first year to be able to work with the folks, try to break things loose when they get frustrations, help me with my learning curve, help them with their learning curve as we continue to serve our incredible constituents.
Anything particularly over the last year that surprised you? Anything that stood out as the thing you were not expecting that to be that way?
I think the one thing that when people ask me that question, and I think I surprise them with the answer, is just how nice the members of Congress are. There's a lot of really good members up there. And it's so crazy. If you're a member of Congress from Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, or Indiana, you love Northwest Florida for generations. You and your families have been vacationing down here because we're the closest beaches. So we've got this relationship with a lot of members of Congress that have a connection with Northwest Florida, especially all those that serve in the military through all the installations. They all have a chapter of their life. It's crazy how familiar our part of the world is with so many folks that serve in Washington, D.C.
That's cool. I love that. You are working on it. There's a lot of things we have to talk about today. One of them is you've now sent a letter to Doug Collins, the Secretary of the Veterans Administration, requesting a relook at putting a full-service VA hospital here.
Correct. So evidently in 2022, prior to me being in office, there was a study being done by the previous administration. So I want to get an update status on that study, kind of weigh things out. I think we can see the encounter data enough. And now I'm not a hospital administrator, but you know, if your data is there showing it, then let's go ahead and start looking at what our options are. At the same time, we're in this kind of a predicament because we do get community care dollars because we are outside a service area of a hospital that's like in our neighborhood. So, you know, our folks, when they want to go and get their VA service over in Biloxi, they get actually reimbursed for their travel expenses. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those slippery slopes. We should get a disproportionate higher amount of dollars for community care because of where the closest hospital is. So, all right, well, if we're there, are we paying the providers enough in order to get enough robust engagement of doctors want to be interested in taking on the community care service model? So, I mean, I think it's a little bit of the squeaky wheel. We will continue to ping the secretary. And so you start usually with a dialogue, with a letter, and we'll get some findings here in short order. But, they're trying. They inherited a lot of policies on behalf of the Biden administration that are really contrary to what President Trump's vision is. So it's kind of, you know, reengineering and retooling the motor to get it, you know, running in the way a President Trump administration wants to.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird to think about this being a place where you wouldn't have, you know, cause it just seems like there's so many active duty, so many, you know, veterans, so many retirees, that it's kind of hard to imagine we don't have one here, you know. So interesting to keep looking at that. And plus long-term, well, like that sells, that sells the community, right? That helps bolster our military mission if we've got that as an amenity here, so to speak.
Absolutely. Well, but here's the part of it also, you know, that VA hospital was established over Mississippi, at least based the way it was explained to me. I haven't looked at the timeline. But when Trent Lott was majority leader, well, you're majority leader, you have a tremendous amount of discretion over the federal budget, and sometimes you might be able to encourage, you know, that administration in order to say this is a priority that we need to fit. And sometimes deals are cut. So this is why it ends up in Mississippi as opposed to Northwest Florida. You know, the politics were different at that time.
You sit on the Infrastructure and Transportation Committee, and I read a very interesting article that kind of put a couple of pieces together for something that I hadn't really thought of altogether at the same time. And, you know, we are seeing crashes or near crashes at airports. We are seeing infrastructure problems at airports with lack of maintenance over the years. And we're seeing right now the crisis with the TSA funding, and all of this together does not really add up to the golden age of air travel. And what they were basically saying is, it's kind of surprising that nobody, you know, people are seeing the horrible things, but then they're not acting differently. But the question is, what are you guys doing? And I think the answer is you've actually done quite a bit. It just doesn't take place immediately. Is that right?
Correct, correct. So, you know, we in the One Big Beautiful Bill, this is a big deal to the president. And you think about, when you think about air travel, you know, people think about planes, they think about the airports, but sometimes they don't think about the technology that goes behind the scenes. And trying to change that, it's not sexy wanting to send them, you know, billions of dollars into air traffic control when you got to think about so many other things that people would like to see. I want new roads, or I want, you know, better access, you know, for my day-to-day. So we put $15 billion in One Big Beautiful Bill to update air traffic control. And again, to bring more technology to bear in order to make our skies even safer than they currently are. But those type of investments do not happen overnight. You know, and you think about, I'm going to get a little nerdy with you, but there's a culture right now at air traffic control, and these guys are used to working, just call it for what it is. They're working with Windows 95, and now, you know what? We want to make you, you know, go right into the latest version of Windows. Well, some of these guys don't want to do the learning curve. So now then what happens is you're losing a generation or a large mass of your workforce because, you know, I'm going to go ahead and retire as opposed to transition to the new operating system. Well, we've got a shortage of air traffic controllers in the first place. So it makes it for a real dilemma because now you got to ramp up, try to introduce new technology, retain what you've got as a workforce, and then recruit the best and brightest that want to be part of this new next generation of air traffic control. So it sounds great in a soundbite. There's a lot of moving parts behind the scenes in order to continue moving this investment into the latest, greatest technology for safety and efficiency and, you know, wait times.
You have been trying to work on the social media problem, and you've actually put up a bill that would eliminate the Section 230 protection so that they would basically become publishers instead of being, you know, immunized bulletin boards who are not responsible for the content of their platforms anymore. Last week, two huge rulings against Meta and YouTube, and one against just Meta. And essentially between the two of them, they said addictive design, not protecting children, predation is taking place, safety. You all are liable for all the things that you're doing badly, including the way you design these platforms. None of it particularly had to do with content, because that would have been Section 230 stuff, but it was all of the non-content ways you might attack them, and it's worked. What does that tell you as far as legal strategy for reining in social media?
Well, I mean, again, Section 230 allows blanket immunity to these guys. And look, I'm not a litigation person. You know, I'm like, you know what, guys, play in your lane. You know, quit using our children as a commodity.
Yeah.
You know, cut it off with the push alerts at 2 o'clock in the morning that get their attention. You know, moms and dads, you know, and I'm talking to the mom and dads right now. Ripping your phone out of your kid's hand, it becomes a combative issue. And, you know, with my son last night, I was trying to get him ready, go take your shower, get ready for bed, all this stuff. And you got to literally physically take the phone from them. And then it becomes an addiction. They go through a withdrawal as you take it from them. But guys, you've got to get ready. And unfortunately, they become so addicted to these algorithms. And, you know, even if I see his content's innocent, but the content is just keeping him glued to the device.
Yep.
Not healthy, you know, and he made a comment about having homework to do and all. And so, well, why in the heck aren't you doing your homework? Well, I'm just doing some relaxing right now. You know, so, I mean, these guys have created something that generates eyeballs, that ends up generating revenue for their platforms because the ad sales reflect you know, user engagement. And, you know, I'm just like, guys, under 18, that's hands off, okay? And so if I need to get rid of Section 230 in order for you to participate with me, then let's do it. But they also, the self-harm, the dangerous stunts, the dares that take place on social media are what get me concerned as these kids are engaging things that are not helpful to young development minds.
Yeah, if I went on the air celebrating some of the things that are promoted on TikTok, I'd get sued right away. I might wind up in jail. And that's
1,000%.
Yeah, and that's the point, is there's accountability for traditional media as publishers. There's no accountability for social media because of Section 230. And as you said, it's not just the content, it's the thing itself. It's the, you know, it's not just what they're watching as far as, you know, the videos, what's in the video. It's the way the platform is designed to make you want to keep watching it, to watch it more, to feel like you're missing something if you're not watching it, to crave it. Like a drug, or like, you know, cheap, crappy cereal that they make you want to love, all of that stuff. You're working, you proposed a Warrior Road Act, which I think is very interesting. The folks who live in Navarre or travel Highway 98 want to hear about this. What's the plan?
Yeah, so, I mean, we work on getting dollars deployed out for infrastructure that are eligible for federal dollars. Well, what happens, it'll go to the states, and the states are the ones that are actually, you know, the federal government doesn't build roads, the state built the roads. So, you know, now we've basically put more strings attached where if these dollars are being deployed out, now it puts even a higher priority when the federal government sends money out that it must be used on those roads that are critically important to egress in and out of our military installations. So, again, this is just we're putting an extra priority on, all right, guys, we're seeing this money. This is where it's got to be used. And so we're just trying to force the hands of our states when it comes to getting those dollars. And the great thing about it is Jared Perdue, the Secretary of DOT for Florida, great guy. He loves our installations. He's a panhandle boy. He grew up in Northwest Florida, so he gets it. But again, we're just continuing to try to ensure that those dollars can go to 98 and 85 and those roadways that are so critical to get thousands of people to and from work every single day safely.
Yeah, and especially 98 with its proximity to Hurlburt that gets deployed at any time, all the time, to go do the most important tip of the spear missions.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's no joke. Get that done. I'm glad you're working on it. Last thing I was going to ask you is, in case you hadn't seen any of the news over the weekend, we had several million people get together and do these No Kings protests against President Trump. And I was just wondering, I mean, have you been persuaded that you should stop supporting President Trump because of these highly persuasive protests that you've seen?
Yeah, so I like reading my comments on social media, and there's some real, real nasty folks out there, but that's okay. You know, I try not to feed the trolls. but it was interesting. I mean, they were in every market in the United States, and, you know, kind of scratch my head, you know, how all this stuff gets paid for, whatnot. But, you know, this is a different way to keep a political fury amongst the left base. And, you know, it's, you know, Trump derangement syndrome is real. You know, I think the president is doing a lot of right things, and the left has to find ways to raise their base. But the one thing that the left does not have, they can spew all their hate for President Trump, but they're not pushing out a single policy that is making a difference in the lives, like no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security. You're going to see after this particular tax cycle with tax day coming up, the refunds are going to be pretty aggressive.
You know, I will say this, people don't ever think much about it, but poster board and glitter pens are expensive, man. I don't know where the funding comes from for all of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but again, there's not a policy that the Democrats push. I see it every single day when I'm in D.C. The Democrats are offering nothing in order to save this country, not a single thing. And I'm sorry, I'm going to offend some people with that, but it's just the truth.
Jimmy Patronis, he is our congressman from Northwest Florida, District 1. As always, Jimmy, thanks so much for the time. And I know you want to say go Illini now that Duke is out, right?
Yeah, my bracket's totally busted. That three-pointer that UConn
shot,
you know, with 0.3 seconds left, unbelievable.
Fantastic.
But I tell you, that's what's so – you're going to get me on a whole other system.
Oh, I know,
NIL
I know.
And stuff. I mean – I just want the kids to be kids.
Yeah, you know? Let them have some fun, man. It's a thriller and a little bit of Christian Leitner payback, although a couple decades late. Jimmy Patronis, as always, thank you for the time, sir. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
See you, buddy. Thanks.